It's the Low Score Podcast with Bobby and Jay.
Still don't believe me? Now I'll read more deeply into your soul. I see that you enjoy Nintendo games. You like Silicon Knights games, don't you? So, you like adventure games? You seem to like The Legend of Zelda, don't you? You like action games? Oh, so you've played Super Smash Bros. Melee before. You still don't believe me? I will show you my psychokinetic power.
Ready to party like it's New Year's Eve 1959 in Rapture, it's time for another big episode of the Low Score Podcast with your hosts, Bobby and Jay.
This piece of crap, stupid thing I bought on eBay, It says it's supposed to be a time machine, and it's just like a little replica of a time machine. What is this?
Hey man.
Oh, hey Jay, sorry about that. I bought this thing on eBay. It's like, you know, like the in Chrono Trigger, the little time machine that they have. Tabin's little thing that he sets up at the beginning of the game. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to buy one of these like little things. And I assumed that it was going to work, but apparently it's just a replica. What a piece of shit.
Well, how much did you pay for it?
It was like $22.99, buy it now. But it was like $8 shipping, because you know how they do it.
Well, that's how they do it. So you spent over $30 on a real time machine? I think you got ripped off.
I think so too. Piece of crap. But
it doesn't even work. Yeah. Hey, but you remember, I don't know if you remember, we were supposed to podcast day. That's why I came in here.
Oh, that's right. What is this? This is the Low Score Podcast.
Yeah, big episode 35 with you and me. Bobby J.
I am me.
Yeah, I'm me.
J, a.k.a. the letter J.
How do you like that?
That's pretty good. That's a voice announcing me.
No, that was that's goddamned Judge Reinhold announcing you.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
It's from the Clerks animated series.
I remember. All right. That's perfect. Play them again. I like those. Who are you?
I am Bobby.
Okay, Scott.
Who's me?
J, a.k.a. the letter J.
I wish we had some more of our friends here. Because if Jimmy was here, I might have something for him. I'm not sure. But
hey, speaking of friends, friend of the show, good friend of the show, Eric. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, hey. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, I was just coming over to chill. What are you guys doing?
We're starting
all this audio recording equipment. Oh, podcast, eh?
Yeah, we're doing a podcast. We're going to review some candy that great friend of the show at this point. How about that?
He's the best. So a lot of people know a good friend of the show, Eric, who is currently in Japan. And in the mail last week, I got this crazy package of like weird Americana bag stuff.
Yes.
With a whole boatload of wacky Japanese candy. So we got these weird Pokemon assorts. Those are pretty good. One that he cautions Satch to license is this odd blue thing, which on the back, it looks like some sort of, like, you got to add water and it becomes this weird whipped topping.
I don't like whipped topping from Power.
That's totally awesome.
That's pretty crazy. There's these nasty red looking things that look like, look at this. They look like dehydrated nuts or something on this package. Like like an owl pellet or something.
Did you get an orange Kit Kat? Because I got an orange Kit Kat.
Did you? I did get an orange Kit Kat. Well, should we try some of these?
Yeah.
Wait, I'm sorry. Aren't all Kit Kats orange?
No, it's orange flavored Kit Kat.
Oh, yeah. My God.
It also has limes and lemons on it, so I don't know what that means.
All right, should we bust into this?
Yeah, what do you want to try? I'm going to try one. You want to try one?
All right, well, if you want to try the citrus Kit Kat, you know what I want to try?
Oh, did you? Wait. Hey guys, what's up?
Oh, hey, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, I just got let in. Not much. Did you get a crappy time machine off eBay?
Yeah, it's just a piece of junk. It doesn't work. We're trying some candy right now that good friend of the show, Eric gave us or sent us from Japan, which is like the future because they have a different time zone.
It's like, cool. Hey, can I?
That's true.
I'll eat whatever you don't want. So, you know, just hand it over.
Okay. What are you going to try?
I'm going to try this hot cake butter and maple candy.
Okay.
This tiny square. I'm a little scared by it, but
I have. Say that, but why don't you tell me what it looks like? Tell everyone what it looks like.
So it's sticky on the inside, like it's got, oh, and it smells like maple syrup, like it's covered in syrup, or maybe
it looks kind of good.
Oh, it is good. Hold on. That is the damnedest thing. So it's like a crispy wafer on the inside, and the outside is like a, oh, like a white chocolate with hints of caramel and maple all in it.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to try, this doesn't have a description, well, it has, I mean, it has Japanese words on it, but.
That's not really a description.
So it's nonsense.
Yeah, but it's got some lady looking down, and she's surrounded by sakura flowers. So I'm going to try this. It comes in a little red package.
Now, did we get different stuff?
I don't know if we got different stuff. I need to use my teeth for this. Okay, this is just a round red ball. I bet this is just going to be like a cherry-flavored candy. Gosh. Whoa! Ew.
That's a violent reaction you had there.
It's salty. It's horribly salty. What the hell?
Sodium pill supplement.
Christ. Oh. There's no flavor. It's just a salt ball. No, there's a flavor. I think I got through it. It's like a warhead. You got to get to the core.
Okay. We'll save some of these next time, but I'm going to try this green thing, which, hold on, let me read what Eric said. But Eric says, the green box is good, but the contents are hard to unwrap, which I asked him about, and he wrote me back and said that, like, you can eat the packaging? I got to go.
Not the same green box I'm holding up, right? You can't eat this, like, cardboard box?
No, I think he may have suggested that. He said it's a pain in the butt to open. Hold on, let's
maybe
eat
there's... Maybe he means like the wrappers around each of the candies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it like kind of like little rice paper cellophane-y stuff?
Yes.
That's good. Just eat that.
I like rice paper.
That has fiber, so it'll keep you alive for a while.
I'm gonna unwrap one. I'm gonna try it both ways.
Try it both ways.
I still don't know what flavor that candy was after the salt.
Bouillon cube.
Eric's a dick, and he just sent us bouillon cubes.
Wrote some Japanese characters on him.
Are you eating so much green stuff?
No, I'm not.
It's it almost tastes like green tea flavored. You ever like a green tea ice cream?
Yeah. That could be okay.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And say, lastly, I'm going to try this milk candy. It is milk chocolate. It says milk on it. It says Choco on the actual candy. And it's a square-shaped Cadbury egg.
Nice. That's delicious.
Yeah, not
Cadbury
bad.
Cadbury cube.
Yeah, it's Cadbury cube.
Okay. I'm gonna open one more thing. I'm gonna bust into these Pokemon candies.
Mutant bunnies produce Cadbury cubes.
You actually have to trade to get all of the different types of that candy. You can't.
I think
them on your own.
I think
Cadbury?
So.
No, there's like two or three.
Oh, I meant on Pokemon. Store. But, oh yeah, okay. I'll go to a different store next time.
See, some of these. There's five of these. One of them's got Pichu, and one of them's got Meowth, and the others, I don't know. I feel like I should know who this guy is. Like, I'm a movie or something.
Hold still.
Is that one of the legendary Bert? I don't know.
I think you're one of the legendary. This is fantastic.
Really? Looks like Picasso during Cuba.
They look like pink M&Ms, but they taste like strawberries. I'm having the blue one, Bobby.
I don't know. Do I want to eat the Pico one?
The Pico one looks like it might be chocolate.
Is it chocolate? Where did my my method of busting into things that are not cans go?
I don't know.
Any sharp... Ow, fuck. Sharp object. All right, I'm going to eat the Pico one, and then we will roll.
No, well, Eric, you are the best. This is the coolest thing I've ever gotten in the mail. We will be drawing this candy tastings out for several episodes.
Yes.
The first thing sent to the Low Score podcast, and it was from frickin' Japan.
These look like rabbit droppings.
Yeah.
And they're so small that you can't taste them.
Is this the Pichu one?
The is that what he's called, Pichu?
The baby Pikachu?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Pichu.
Yeah, Pichu.
So they drop a syllable and it's a baby?
Yep. That's how Japan works.
Flanagan.
Yes. That would be the little me.
What was the little Jigglypuff? Or something like that? It's like Puff.
Is there?
Or Jig? Something? I don't know.
Yeah, all right.
Hold on. There's a There's a bait. I'm looking it up.
Informed commentary.
Listen.
Is this a candy podcast, guys?
This isn't a candy podcast, Kevin. Thank you.
I thought this was a candy podcast when I came in here.
You were misinformed. I invited you on the wrong night, shit. Apparently. Pandy contest.
This isn't a
No, it's not.
This is neither a panda nor a panty podcast.
Guys, it's Iggly Buff for those who are wondering.
Are you kidding?
I'm going to get a tattoo of that.
According to Wiki Answers, I'm not.
That's amazing.
All right, so it's me, Jay, Kevin, and of course...
This is Jimmy.
That's me.
Doing the podcast tonight. It's a big episode, of course. We're going to continue our reading of Castlevania II Worlds of Power tonight. If you didn't listen to the last one, you need to go back, listen to that, or else the story is just going to make no sense to you. And then we're also going to be doing a big year in review for 2009, because it is December.
It's the middle of December. It's probably the last podcast we'll do this year. We've been playing a lot of games. We've played all the games. We feel confident to tell you what our best and worst, our highs and lows are. Big news events, and we'll do it like only we can.
Yes. So let's kick it off with a little Castlevania Worlds of Power. How does that sound to you all?
Sounds great.
Sounds good to me.
All right. So let's see if everyone doesn't know what their colors are. Jay, you are green. I am purple. And Jimmy, who's going to be reading our special character for the night, is orange. Blood orange, I should say.
Blood orange.
So, a dramatic reading of Castlevania II, Worlds of Power, by FX9.
Chapter 4, Castlevania Caper. Castlevania, of course, was a name that Tim Bradley always figured came from Castle and Transylvania. The place that Simon Belmont called Castlevania, however, looked nothing like Tim imagined it might have from the names alone. Certainly, he could see stone castles. Certainly, the place held all the menace implied by Transylvania, the birthplace for the legend of vampires. However, otherwise it was quite a surprise. Golly, Simon, things are pretty creepy here in Castlevania at night, huh?
Simon Belmont lifted an eyebrow. Creepy? Yes, certainly. But it's not night here now, Timothy. It's broad daylight.
Tim Bradley took a double take. Day? But that's the moon up there, isn't it?
No, Timothy, that's the sun. Since the curse of Dracula came upon this dimension, a shadow has been cast over my land, and a chill has touched its heart.
Tim shivered. Boy, I'll say. I mean, take a look at this place. And what a place it was. Castlevania looked like a cluster of medieval towns, but drawn by a madman in a depression, and 17 inked with about 1,000 colored shades of dark. Buildings slanted dangerously. Towers leaned further than the Tower of Pisa. The thatched roof houses looked like they'd been left in the sun too long and then quick frozen. The place smelled foresty, but a forest filled with mold, fungus, and mildew. The single bright aspect was the taste of gingerbread in the air. It made Tim hungry enough to take out a Hershey bar and start chewing. The candy boosted his spirits. So anyway, here we are, he said between bites. We won't have to worry about Bert or my mom in Castlevania. You want to tell me the rest of the story?
Simon Belmont nodded gravely. When I killed Dracula... After all that struggle...
Boy, you bet it's a struggle. It took me a whole 2 months to win my first game, and I thought my thumbs were going to fall off.
Simon frowned and put his hands on his hips. Please, you are going to have to keep a little quiet so I may relate my story.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that.
After all that struggle, after I defeated Dracula, I did not realize that I should have burned his body and scattered the ashes. No, I thought I had won that day, and so I left him with a stake in his heart. I knew something was wrong when my beautiful Linda, whom Dracula had captured, did not come back to me. Simon put a hand over his heart, lowered his head, and sighed.
A pang nudged Tim. Gee, he felt really sorry for this guy. After all that effort, he doesn't get the love of his life back. It was at this moment that Tim Bradley determined that he would do his very best to help Simon Belmont. This was a good man. That's okay, Simon, said Tim. We'll get her back, together. Even though this is the weirdest looking place I've ever seen, and I'm not really sure if this is a dream.
Oh, make no mistake, this is no dream. Dracula is very real, and his power is far more than I thought it was. When I left his body in the coffin, his helpers came. They cut Dracula into 5 parts. His evil soul swept throughout the dimension, a temporary stay from its vanishment. For you see, Timothy Bradley, the soul of Dracula has 48 hours to find a body to possess so that it can remain here. Like bad movie music, a wind slept through some nearby trees, snatching off the last of the leaves and the rattling of the limbs.
A shiver of dread went up Tim Bradley's spine. Yikes! He realized. This was no Halloween prank. This felt like the real thing. You mean a body like me?
Simon Belmont turned a haunted look toward Tim. No, me.
You? Why would he want you?
He must possess the last person he infected with his blood, said the hero. He unrolled his sleeve. On his arms were three parallel grooves filled with scabbed blood. These scars of Dracula, Timothy Bradley. I am the person he must possess, and this is the true problem. This is why I need an aide to help me through Castlevania. This is why I need your help so desperately.
You mean, if he takes you over, you'll become a vampire?
Yes, and then the monster shall again rule my beloved home of Castlevania. True dread jolted Tim Bradley. He felt the intense need for Hershey's big block come over him. But where was his pack? Oh yes, he bent over and rummaged through his contents with his hand.
Sounds pretty serious, Simon. You're saying you've got 2 days to stop Dracula. I suppose that means you have to find those body parts, right? You put them together, you fight him again, you beat him again, and this time you destroy him forever. He found the chocolate bar and gripped it. Hey, you know, this would make a fantastic video game. He turned back around, starting to tear the wrapping off the candy bar. In fact, when I get back, I'm going to write a game company immediately and suggest that... Yikes! The yikes was said in good cause, for Simon Belmont was no longer totally Simon Belmont.
Greetings, mortal, said the voice of Count Dracula. Come to Castlevania for an early and unpleasant death, I take it.
Tim Bradley dropped his candy bar.
Chapter 5. Dr. Simon and Mr. Dracula.
Simon Belmont was undergoing a transformation like nothing Tim Bradley had ever seen before. His back was bending over like a hunchback's and his fingers grew hairy. His nose lengthened and tapered to a point, his face thinning, his mouth drawing into a cruel sneer. The hair became limp and greasy. It was like Dr. Jekyll turning into Mr. Hyde. Only much, much worse. And the eyes became narrow slits behind which pupils glowed like live coals in a furnace. They burned through Tim like laser beams etched with razor blades. If Tim Bradley could have screamed, he would have let out a long, loud one. Unfortunately, he was so paralyzed with fear that he could barely move, let alone make a sound. Dracula was taking over Simon Belmont's body.
You are a puny little nothing, aren't you? Why ever did Simon Belmont choose you? Asked Dracula's voice, coming from Simon's transformed body. I can see that my success in taking over his body is virtually assured.
Oh, yeah, Tim blurted, breaking out of his freeze. I happen to have already beaten you 19 times.
Is that right, mortal? I certainly remember none of those times. You are a silly thing, aren't you? I shall enjoy hearing you squeal and feeling you squirm when I sink my lovely fangs into your soul.
Is that the tooth?
Ah! Cried Dracula's voice. Simon's body jerked back as though physically struck. A pun! I abhor puns! If there's anything I can't stand more, it's stupid, silly jokes.
Really? Well then, Drac, maybe you know why a duck flies looking down.
No! Simon's body shook with violent tremors. No! Stop or I shall tear you to pieces!
Because he doesn't want to quack up.
Ah! The vampire's face now seemed to be merely superimposed over that of Simon Belmont's, and that double-imaged face was freaking out! Dumb joke! Stupid joke!
No, Drac, said Tim Bradley, sensing victory within his grasp. It's a foul joke.
The vampire's face contorted with outrage. His eyes bugged so wide they appeared as though they were going to pop out. Bah! He said. I shall revenge myself upon you for that, mortal. Take heed. Your blood and your soul will belong to me.
Don't count Dracula your chickens before they're hatched, wimpire. Dracula didn't even get a scream out of that one.
The fanged mouth opened incredibly wide, and then pop! The flattening picture of the count imploded, leaving. Simon back the way he had originally been, only more pained, if that was possible. That was the very worst yet, he said. The accursed vampire almost had me then. If not for you and your jokes, my new friend, I surely would have fallen under his sway.
Hey, give yourself some credit. You put some willpower into the battle, I'm sure, said Tim. He was feeling braver already. That old fool wasn't such a danger after all. Ha! This would be just like an easy video game.
You realize now Count Dracula will be after your body and soul as well.
Tim shrugged nonchalantly. I can handle it.
If he defeats me and gains the use of my body and remains in this dimension, he will take great pleasure in flaying every inch off your skin.
Tim blinked.
And after he pours salt on your raw nerves, he will dip you in a vat of acid.
Tim gulped.
And then, Timothy Bradley, he will start torturing you.
Simon, you know, I think I'm going to need more chocolate for this little expedition. And I just remembered, I'm allergic to garlic. Maybe you'd better get my older brother Fred. He's really much better than I am at Castlevania.
However, Simon Belmont had already spun on his heel and had started down the road. Come, Timothy Bradley. We shall go to the local tavern where we shall get our supplies and plan our strategy.
Tim Bradley stood still for a moment, trying to figure a way out of this business. But then the darkness closed in, cold and ominous. He grabbed his bag of necessities and tripped out down the cobblestones after the blonde hero. And scene.
We will continue next time. Actually, not next time, the time after that, with what should be the rousing conclusion or rousing middle section of Castlevania II, Worlds of Power.
This is the greatest book of all time.
It's gripping. I'm really caught up in it right now.
Well, I was worried because this book's supposed to be for children, and I was worried it was going to be too violent. But whoever thought that you could fight Dracula with puns?
I mean, I've dreamed that, but now that I know that it's possible.
Oh, my God, who hasn't?
I can't, you know, I've read this book so many times that it doesn't even faze me anymore.
I hear you.
It's awful. Yeah. It's so awful.
Is it warm in here? Do you guys, is it?
Yeah, it feels a little bit odd.
Slightly,
I don't know.
Ever so slightly, yes.
You know, that's the damnedest thing, because the little time machine that I bought, it's glowing.
Really?
Yeah. Let's see if I can turn it off. But while I'm trying to turn it off, Jay, why don't you talk about 2009, the year in review?
Well, this has been a big year in video games. As we mentioned at the start of the podcast, we're here at the end of the year. We're a video game podcast. Huh. We're going to talk about what we've been playing. You know, all through the year we've been playing these games, made attention
this
to the news.
Damn thing.
So what we want to do right now is we're going to, I guess,
piece of
first kind of
crap.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. I just, no, it's, everything's cool. It's fine. There's just, uh-oh.
What?
So, I may have set the time machine off.
I feel weird, guys. I feel weird.
Yeah.
Now it's just like,
Whoa! Well, that was weird.
That was a little weird.
I don't know. I felt funny for a second, but everything seems to be as it was before.
Yeah, I'm good. But anyway, like we were saying, we're talking about the year in review. We're going to go around and do kind of a round table here about what we liked about this year. And I just got to say, this has been a great year. I mean, whether you were, you know, into your PC games or console games, you know, if you like shooters, if you like platformers, adventure games, real-time strategy games. This is, you know, we're all lifelong gamers here, and I can't think of more fun than I've ever had in a single year, I think.
So, yeah, it certainly felt like the start of something really, really good. I see a lot of potential that'll come as this year concludes and, you know, into the next decade as we do that. The PC genre especially was super strong. But the PlayStation,
great year for PC games. Yeah.
The PlayStation was extremely strong, and Nintendo, right. I don't know. They wowed me at least with the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. It seems like it's weird. Here we are almost at the end of the decade. And when we compare these to the games we were playing, you know, at the start of the decade, you
no
know,
contest.
Super Mario World and Sonic the Hedgehog. It's crazy that, you know, how far we've come.
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing, you know, Baldur's Gate, which is so inconceivably big compared to all the other games I played on my home consoles. I just still can't wrap my head around it.
Absolutely. Well, so we're getting too far ahead of ourselves. This is our big 1998 year in review. So let's go around. What do we want to talk about, guys? We want to start with some of the big games, some of the big stories.
Let's talk about some of the big games. Jimmy, tell me, I mean, what's one of those big games that you played this year?
I can tell you a game I played a lot of is Fallout 2.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
It is fantastic. I don't know if you played the first one.
Yeah, I did play the first one.
Okay, yeah. It was not as big of a success, I think, but you know, it's a lot of the same. It's iterating on a lot of the same concepts as the first one, but just really big, imaginative game. I mean, I think that's kind of the pinnacle of PC RPGs and something that really sets, you know, PC RPGs apart from what you're going to find on a console. Just this scope and non-linearity and just the ability for the player to really go in whatever direction they choose, whatever type of character they want.
I mean, tell me about it. I was playing some Quest 64, and that's a console game. Man, no contest. Fallout 2 and Baldur's Gate have so much more going for it than Quest 64.
You know, I got to defend Quest 64, though.
No,
I mean,
fuck you. Quest 64 is a goddamn awful game.
For all of its flaws, I can see its potential. Can I?
No, listen, you're like me. I mean, just we're talking about the beginning of this decade. Nintendo was the place to go for role-playing games. I mean, what was there on the Genesis? What, Phantasy Star 2? That's about it, right? So I was like, yeah, dude, getting my N64, going to get my RPG on. Nothing. It's been a vortex wasteland for 2 years. Now all of a sudden they poop out Quest 64 with us and start expecting to like it just because it's the only role-playing game I can play? No, thank you.
Yeah, when Final Fantasy VII was announced to be a PlayStation game, that, I mean, it just took me by such shock. I know we talked about this, you know, last year.
Hey,
but
what happened to 4, 5, and 6? We went straight from 3 to 7.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. What's going on?
My friend said you can get 5, but it's in Japanese. He doesn't really understand it. But
man, that shit's all like ching chong wing wong.
Yeah, I was reading a Game Pro, and they were talking about, you know, how we're never, ever going to get those Final Fantasies over here. It's just one of those things that we're going to have to deal with. We're going to have to, you know, put up with the funny numbering and stuff. And that jump from 3 to 7 is just, it's silly. It's very silly indeed.
It's interesting. You know, you just don't know what's going on. I so feel like we're missing something not being in Japan, you know? It's like all these games are getting... I mean, they're already playing Dreamcast over there. And it's like, what are we doing over here? Yeah, yeah. Who the hell knows when that thing's coming out over here?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would be lined up to buy it. But if Sega doesn't have the faith in the U.S., then, you know, what can we do?
I have some like, sexy stats. This is from Game Buyer magazine.
Oh, I love Game Buyer.
Yeah, this is... Sega's Katana becomes Dreamcast. Listen to this. The CPU is a Hitachi 128-bit graphics engine with onboard RISC processor. I mean, it can do an operating frequency of 200 megahertz, 360 MIPS with 1.4 flops. Like, this thing's going to be insane.
How many bits is it?
128 bits.
Is this a computer or is this, what is this?
No. It's like the PlayStation because it has a desk. But it's like the Nintendo
64. You know how I feel about that.
Yeah, but it's like the Nintendo 64 in that it has 4 controller ports built in. That's going to be pretty cool. Okay. Weird thing, though, it runs Windows CE.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
CE. And it's gonna support DirectX. The CD-ROM drive is the 12-speed. So, you know, that's not too slow, right? I mean, that, like, the Sega CD was a 1X CD-ROM drive. So, I think...
I can only burn at 1x, so, you know, anything above 1x impresses me. So
plus, listen to this, onboard modem 336 kbps.
Whoa, man!
Yeah.
What do you play online?
I don't know. The article doesn't say. Software. The big unknown is software.
Oh, software. I love playing my software.
I'm going to use software online.
I don't
know about online gaming. I'm not sold. I don't think, you know, it's really going to catch on. I mean, Ultima Online, I know I've heard about, but yeah.
It seems like there's a few types of games that work. Obviously, StarCraft would be the first example. Because Ultima seems too niche to me, and it's too flat and involved. I mean, I want like a much richer story, like you said in Baldur's Gate. But StarCraft and, you know, playing online like that seems to work really well. It seems simple enough to be able to handle, you know, the lag and stuff. But as far as anything on a console could go, like, what, I'm gonna play Sonic Online? I don't understand.
No, this.
I
mean, this article does say that they'll have Unreal and Quake on a console. And
But with a controller?
Yeah, especially this weird looking controller. I just don't understand how that's ever going to work.
Impossible.
It's huge. I mean, it's huge. I mean, it looks like a brick or something. It's just gigantic.
It looks like the Saturn controller.
Yeah, well, when you
that Saturn. Served the Saturn well, didn't it?
Yeah. Short run that had.
Yep. And the Jaguar, too, had a controller like that. And, you know, you can get bargain bin Jaguar games nowadays, believe it or not.
I was just at a KB. They were selling one for $40.
Oh, cool. That's really cheap.
Yeah.
Wow.
And KB.
I should go pick one of those up.
You should.
I mean, just to have it, you know, because, like, in the future, that would just seem like one of those cool things. But, yeah, I have, you know, a Jaguar. It's...
Yeah, my mom says, I've got all that stuff in storage, and she said, oh, it's never going to be worth anything. But I said, just you wait, Mom, like baseball cards, one day it'll be worth something.
Right. You know, speaking of online games, we were talking about PC games. One game that I just didn't get would be Tribes, that is kind of made waves as it's the shooter that is only online. You know, you can only, there's some kind of tutorial stuff locally on the computer, but you have to have a connection. I'm rocking 28.8 at home. I don't know what you guys are doing. So already.
Yes, it's similar.
I can barely play this thing. And it just seems too repetitive. I mean, there's no real objective. I mean, like when I'm playing GoldenEye or something, it's nice. It's small, contained. There's only four of us. And it's like a communal thing where I'm with my friends. But going online with Tribes, it feels so impersonal. It feels like... these worlds are too big. I'm spending more time running around than I am shooting at anything. You know, maybe just because I'm not all that good at it, but I don't really understand the appeal.
Yeah, I can understand. I mean, as someone who played a bunch of Unreal this year, and Unreal, by the way, is a technical marvel. That's a good-looking game.
And I didn't think Quake 2 could look any better, but Unreal, you know, it's really setting the bar up higher.
And Unreal has this mode, Well, no, never mind the mode, but I don't know, the world just seems so much cooler. It's like you say, Tribes is kind of empty, and Unreal has this, you know, neat, like, monster, alien, organic castle vibe. It's a combination of all these things that I like, you know, Quake and Doom and all that just jammed into one, so.
Right. Let's go back to StarCraft for a bit, which we mentioned early on. I'm blown away by this game. You know, I was not the biggest Warcraft 2 fan. You know, for me, when I think of real-time strategy games, Command & Conquer and Red Alert, to a lesser extent, but I was really a big fan of the original Command & Conquer for his great story and just this feeling that you were commanding this massive army.
And conquering with it.
And conquering with it, exactly. I was commanding and I was conquering. But in this game, you're StarCrafting. And what that means is you're basically crafting an army among the stars because it's in space.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's a fun game.
To me, what's different about this is in a game like CNC where you could, like I said, have these big armies, StarCraft limits you to 12 unit selections. And the units seem larger both in appearance and in feel. They seem more substantial, more powerful. They seem to have more personality.
Speaking of personality in StarCraft.
Carrier has arrived.
That's awesome.
You know, there's no better feeling than being Protoss, getting up 12 carriers and unlaunching them on your unsuspecting enemy.
JJ.
You think as I do.
You really do. We just have something in common. But actually, no, I have to admit that I don't own StarCraft. I just got, what's it called when the person gives you the disc and you just install, like, so you can just play online, but only... I can't remember what it's called.
It's not shareware, but it's...
No, no. Like, there's a specific mode on the disc, and it's one of those things that's cool. Like,
it's like a boot disc?
Ghost mode?
No, god damn it, you guys. So someone let me borrow the disc, and I installed it, but all I can do is play one map on Battle.net.
In feebled mode?
You know, it's not feebled mode. I mean, but it basically is feeble mode, but I think it's really smart of Blizzard to use this tactic to get people like me to play the game, because eventually I'm going to buy it, right? Of course.
It's like a de facto demo.
Exactly.
Well, you know, I don't know about you guys. You mentioned Blizzard, and Blizzard's starting to prove themselves, but one company that I didn't think could publish a good game, and they did last year, was Age of Empires by Microsoft. Have you guys played this game?
I have not, but I've heard tell. Tell me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of like a hybrid like Command and Conquer Civ 2 thing, right?
Yeah, so you know, I'm into history and I like the real world, and you know, as much as I appreciate Unreal and StarCraft and space and things like that, Age of Empires, it uses real historical civilizations. You know, it's got a lot of the same resource management as these games we've been talking about, but it's by Microsoft, who, you know, they've never impressed me with anything besides Windows 95, and here they go.
Yeah, not really in the game development business.
No. I don't think they have much of a future in it, but, you know, Age of Empires at least shows me that maybe they do.
It seems smart for a company that, you know, we're all PC gamers, we're all playing, you know, primarily on Windows-based machines. I guess it's kind of like, you know, I worry that they're going to be overextending themselves. It's like, hey guys, like I thought, you know, you've got a, you know, an Office, you know, a platform to run and an operating system to run. Let's not overextend ourselves. But, you know, I it'll be interesting to see how that flourishes, if they can keep up the resources to keep a franchise like that going.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just to see that they are putting their hardware or their software on the Dreamcast says a little bit about, I think, what the future is going to look like.
I think that should be a really interesting test for them if they can, you know, reach a broader gaming audience.
I don't know.
What are some of the other awesome games you guys played this year?
Grim Fandango.
Yeah,
has anyone else played this game? This game is awesome.
It's probably the best PC game I played this year.
That is more the funniest game I've ever played.
It seems like we used to get adventure games all the time. I mean, I remember just a couple years ago we were playing them ad nauseum, and now it seems like it's slowing down a little bit. But I think they're back.
I'm thinking Grim Fandango 2. It's the doors open now for tons of great adventure games.
It's the best adventure game I've played since Myst. Maybe the best adventure game ever. Certainly the most charming. It looks so good. I love the decision to go more cartoony with stuff.
Not simple, but stylized, I think.
Very stylized, but also still a lot of cool animation.
Yeah, fascinating just art direction and decisions. And everything about that game is so good.
I don't want to say too much about the story, but I really like the logical, neat way that they kind of broke up all the acts. You know.
Yeah, and just the little slight changes to your character and the environment as you progress through the game, I thought were really cool.
Now, what's the name of the guy who worked on this? He did the Maniac Mansion sequel, whatever it was called.
Eye of the Tentacle.
Day
of the Tentacle.
Day of the Tentacle.
And he did.
Tim Schafley.
Tim Schafer.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds right.
Tim Schafer. I see.
Yes.
I see a future for this guy. I mean, it's weird to have someone that you think of as just like, he wrote the game. That's what he does. It's not a common, you know, you don't think of like the person who wrote Super Mario Brothers.
I think of just a company, you know, a company publishes a game.
Right. Like I'm a Nintendo fan. I'm a Squaresoft fan. But, and it's true too. Even in a game like StarCraft, which has a fantastic story, you know, Grim Fandango, it's like the game really is the story. And yes, there's great puzzles wrapped around it, but, you know, StarCraft, I feel like I'm solving the puzzle and stuff, and I get neat cutscenes. While Grim Fandango, I'm like, I want to solve this puzzle because I want to get the next.
I want to see what happens to these characters.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I'll play it. Yeah, I'll get around to it like next year or so.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, so one of the things that struck me this year was what the PlayStation has been able to do in terms of just games that look, for a console, of course, I mean, not like the PC, but for games that look really good. And one of those games was Gran Turismo. This is the first racing game that I played for any amount of time. And I love that it uses real cars. And, you know, it seems like they're trying to simulate what it is to be racing and not just, you know, whatever your kart, you know, arcade game racing type thing.
I mean, it's a game that makes me excited to be able to drive sometime. You know, I haven't really had that much opportunity to do it yet, but if it's anything like this game, I can't wait.
Yeah. I got to admit, I'm on record as saying, I mean, I think the PlayStation's overall pretty junky. I mean, the graphics are terrible. The load times are terrible. I think those memory cards are a ripoff. I mean, why can't I just save right on the disk?
you can't save on a disk, dummy.
I know, but I can save on my N64 games.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying. You'd rather have a cartridge than a disc.
Medium plugs in. Yeah, I just think it's a total ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Gran Turismo looks pretty good. I still don't really get the appeal. Like, I don't know. To me, when I think racing games, I'm a Cruisin' USA fan.
Yeah,
like,
I got to side with Jay on this. That game looks boring.
I think it's brutal.
You know, it's not going anywhere.
You guys, you couldn't be any more wrong. This is like Cruisin' USA is fine, but this is the type of thing, like Kevin says, like this is simulating what it feels like to be driving these cars that we're never going to get to.
If I want a simulator, I'll play, you know, a flight simulator or like a space combat simulator.
Yeah, but
you know, there are tons of those out right now, and it's so much more fun than driving a car.
No, but I was racing a car. Like if it was a driving simulator where you're like cruising around the streets. That would be stupid. I can understand that. But this is a racing simulator.
Yeah, I more meant that it doesn't look like it's for me. I mean, I'm not a fan of more realistic sports games anyway. You know, like I'm an NBA Jam fan. I'm a Blitz fan. I'm not a Madden fan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this I guess would kind of be in that same line. I'm not the kind of person who wants to, you know, I just want to jump in and have some fun and wreck cars.
So you're more a Daytona USA person?
I'm a Daytona guy. You know, I think braking's for chumps is basically what I'm trying to say. And any game where I need to brake and like be thoughtful about the condition of my car, you know, that's not for me. I can and you know, part of that isn't real. I'm not a huge car enthusiast. You know, mm-hmm. I don't. This is not my thing. So to me, it's what I wonder is, obviously, this game looks great. A lot of passion has been put into this game. I wonder sincerely how big the audience is going to be for something like this, and if this type of game has any legs.
That's exactly what I was saying. I just can't see it selling that well, or having, you know, it's going to be a curiosity a year from now.
I don't know if I would say curiosity. What I would definitely say it is going to be a niche game for the duration. Like that's understandable because there's only that many people who want to play that kind of game. But I don't think it's going to be uncommon.
Like I wonder. I do think it's a smart move. I mean, PlayStation has kind of come out of the gate trying to market itself as the, you know, grown-up console, whatever that means.
I think that's a perfect segue to another just crazy over-the-top game this year, which was Metal Gear Solid. Speaking of grown-up stuff.
Who thought they would bring that intellectual property back, you know? What games, you know, there's hardly any story on the NES versions, on Snake's Revenge and on Metal Gear.
It's just what I wanted. I wanted a sequel to a shitty Nintendo game that is unplayable and nonsensical. I don't get this game.
You have to give it some credit, though. I mean,
yeah, that game's pretty cool, man.
Is it?
It has intense cutscenes. The story is just crazy over the top.
Oh, that's great. It would be great if I could get there. This game is impossible. Like, I mean, maybe everything you're saying is true, but it's impossible. I can barely get to the title screen.
Dude, you just aim.
I'm not joking. I can't get past the freaking like warehouse part where I'm trying to get to the elevator.
You just aim your character toward the guy you want to shoot. The hammer on the button. What is so hard?
Because I got to be like stealthy and stuff. And it seems like if you screw up once, they catch you and it's just brutally impossible to try to hide from everybody.
Well, see, Jay, it's this whole current thing for stealth. You know, we've also got Thief: The Dark Project.
Thief.
That's a good game. You play that?
Thief is fantastic. Now we're talking about stuff. See, that's different because you've got a whole city to use. You know, and like you're using arrows and stuff. It's easy to like. I mean, it's a tougher game, but it's easy to kill people from afar. You know,
you got your blackjack to knock people out up close. Exactly.
I can't stand the way that game controls. Like maybe I was playing like too much Unreal and I played too much Quake and stuff, but the movement of the character in that game makes no sense to me.
Oh, that makes no sense to you. Freaking Metal Gear Solid makes no sense. What is this weird like isometric like half top down view type of thing? I can never figure out where I freaking am. If I'm behind a box or something, like facing me, I can't even see where I am. I can't tell where I'm going.
Way better than Resident Evil though.
Well,
because at least when you point in a direction, your dude goes in that direction.
Dude, I don't like Resident Evil either. I would not say it's better than Resident Evil. I wouldn't say it's worse.
Oh, it's way.
I think they suffer from the wrong problems. I mean, I guess it's better in the sense that you don't control like a tank, but it's no better in the sense that I can't get further than 15 minutes in.
Maybe you need to give it a shot. I don't know. What could they do to make you like this kind of game?
I don't know, and I don't understand what's wrong with me because everybody likes this game. I mean, at least all the like magazines and stuff are have been raving about it. They would, I mean, like if they could give me an easy mode or like, I don't know, make it a first person mode or make the controls make sense. I don't know what to tell you. I just don't like.
You know what? This game excites me. Sorry, guys.
I recognize that sound.
My bad. That's just one of those things that I had to do. I had it here because I knew it was like Metal Gear Solid, big this year. Got to get the sound effect from it.
But speaking of PlayStation, a game I couldn't get through at all because, you know, I'm trying to play a video game and not read a book was that game Xenogears. Have you guys played this?
No. You've complained about this so much to me. This is awesome.
And so this game, you know, and people tell me that it's a really deep RPG and, you know, it's got a great story and that it's got philosophy behind it and all these things. And it is just text and text and text and text and cutscenes. And there are whole hours of the game where you don't do a single thing. And so, you know, I put this game down for a while. I came back to it, and I had no idea what was going on. So I don't know about this type of Japanese RPG. I just really don't know if I can get behind it.
I mean, this is the first really, really text-heavy Japanese RPG we've seen. You know, Final Fantasy VII, yes, it had story and cutscenes and stuff in it, but you got to get the gist of what's going on. But, you know, Xenogears, like you said, it's a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think Final Fantasy
about bad philosophy.
One of the great things about Final Fantasy VII last year was, you know, they've got this larger media format in the CD. They're stretching over three discs. They're making bigger cutscenes. I mean, cutscenes on a console, first of all. They're taking advantage, you know, having longer dialogue scenes, even more than we're used to seeing in Final Fantasy III. But it seems like they got too excited. They just got like, oh, look at what we can do. We can do all this crazy story stuff. And they forgot that video games are fun and like I want to play.
I was like the one person last year who's just not a fan of that game.
FF7?
Yeah, I just...
Yeah, you're probably the only one.
It was great, man. I mean,
pretty much everyone else I talk to thinks it's the end-all be-all. And then I have to say, hey, it's go curious. Back and play Final Fantasy III because if you like sprite-based games, you know, that's the one to do. But for a lot of friends, this is the first one they played. So,
Bobby, did you even get past disc one?
There's multiple discs.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Dude,
yes.
Aeris dies at the end of disc one.
Dude, whoa.
Too soon.
What?
Way too soon.
Like Chrono? Do you go and get something and her revive her?
It's just don't say, just shut them.
Sorry. Yeah.
Maybe.
Never.
Let's see. Look,
you guys play that Ocarina of Time?
Well, if we want to shoot our wad early.
Yeah, I was going to save that, but I...
Why not? No sense saving it.
Right.
We're not big on delayed gratification. This is the best game I played all year. I mean, as a lifelong Nintendo fan, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for a Zelda game. I mean, yes, we had Link's Awakening on Game Boy. That was great. But a true follow-up to Link to the Past and a game that not only did it not disappoint, but, I mean, it just exceeded every expectation I had about the game. I mean, it really... You know, like Mario a couple of years ago, Mario 64, like, took that series into 3D and made it work.
Mm-hmm.
I think even more in Mario 64, this feels exactly like Zelda. It just feels like this is the Zelda we were playing all along, and, like, technology is finally, like, caught up to, like, what Zelda should do.
So I love that it retained the structure of the Zelda games, and I think that structure works really well. You know, the basic, like, the small adventure that you have at first, and then you go into a new world, like when you get the Master Sword and Link to the Past, and you come out, and there's just, like, this giant, sprawling world. And they've nailed that. I'm so excited to see that, you know, where they go, where they evolve this structure, because I think there's a lot of potential in the future. I assume they're going to make a second one, like the Ocarina 2 or whatever, right?
Dude, I don't know. Yeah. It's been like, what, 7 years since the last like console Zelda? And like, really? How are they going to iterate on this? Like, what's wrong with this game? I mean, there's a lot of games we talked about already where I'm like, man, they could do a lot, but I don't know what the fuck they're going to do.
Like, fucking already, blow up the moon, man. Like, what you got to do. That's the only way to step it up.
Blow up.
The only way they could make it better is two ponies.
I don't know about that.
Two pona.
Yes.
I wanted to talk about a game that... this was a great year for Star Wars fans, I think. I mean, one game, Rogue Squadron on the N64, was kind of universally loved. I mean, the N64, you know, soon after its launch, Shadows of the Empire came out, which is this great hybrid. Some of the levels were... shooters, some of them were in planes. Rogue Squadron was all about like a bunch of different missions and X-Wings and Y-Wings and cargo ships. And God, it was just really, really fun. You know, a great expansion on like the world of Star Wars.
I mean, I was still playing Rebel Assault up until 2 or 3 years ago. So, you know, it's nice to have something else to do besides that and TIE Fighter.
And Rebel Assault, well, TIE Fighter, I mean, let's not get started on how awesome that game is. But Rebel Assault, you're like, dude, this is pretty fun. But then it's like, no, let's take it off rails, man. Let's give you like a real legit game. A game going back to the PC that not a lot of people liked, but I loved, was Star Wars Rebellion.
I did not play it.
It is a bad game that I really like. It is a like a resource management kind of you know, like more like Civilization than anything else, where like you're not directly controlling like units of battle, at least not very well. You're like managing resources and stuff. And the biggest problem with it is it's really, really painfully slow. I mean, and just like managing resources and stuff like that. You pick either the Rebels or the Empire, and you got to go colonize planets and stuff, and you get bonuses if you get entire systems and all that. Really heavy micromanagement, really, you know, unapologetically tough and slow, but I really liked it. It was the first... I liked it more for the ambitions. Like, we never really seen anything like that. Like, TIE Fighter's been really great, and we had those... You know, like, the Super Star Wars games were pretty fun back on the SNES, but this is a really first, like, world... You know, expanding game, and I hope this is a game that I think does warrant a sequel. Like, they could take that idea and make it really good. I think we'll see a Rebellion 2 before too long.
Speaking of sequels, we did not need Turok 2.
People like Turok. Turok 1 was awful.
People are dumb.
People are way dumb.
You can play GoldenEye, or you could play Turok.
Yeah. I think people just like dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs are...
There are dinosaurs in Turok.
Here's the thing, though. I'm not six anymore. Dinosaurs are lame.
They're way... Wrong. You're so long.
They're way played out, dude. When did Jurassic Park come out? Like 5 years ago?
That Jurassic Park game, though, in the Chuck E. Cheese?
Obviously, that was great. We were in the Jeep.
That game's awesome.
That's great. But again, played out.
Maybe there's just a lot of Native Americans who are playing video games now, and they want, you know, a character who...
That is legitimate theory.
That's my thought. I don't know. Well, let's talk about something else. How about
I'll tell you what I want to talk about. Speaking of games that needed a sequel, F-Zero X. Have you guys played this?
Yes.
Oh, that's that really fast game, right?
Holy shit. Well, everybody remembers F-Zero from the SNES, one of the first games.
Yeah. One of the first SNES games,
Now there's like a billion cars all at once. It feels so fast. I don't exactly know what's going on, like graphically with this game, but this is the racing game that I want.
Is it in mode 7?
No,
it's different. Yeah.
Mode 7.
No, it's like mode 8. It's past that. It's the next whatever the next mode is.
A la mode.
But it reminds me in a lot of ways of Wipeout. Like that's kind of what they've done to it.
I think it takes a lot of cues from Wipeout, but it looks way better than Wipeout. It controls way better, plays faster. Mm. And again, it's N64, so I don't mean to keep harping on this. No load times. I get to save right on the cart. I don't worry about losing my freaking memory cards or filling them up with those 15 like tiny blocks. I want to stick on the N64. Talk about Rare. Everybody knows Rare, this quintessential Nintendo company.
They made Donkey Kong.
I would say still most famous for the Donkey Kong Country games on the SNES. They just came out with Banjo-Kazooie this year. Anybody played this game?
Nope.
What I like about this game is they really thought about, you know, it's obviously heavily influenced by Mario 64. It's a platforming game. You know, you got a couple of moves and stuff in that same idea, but it's all about collecting stuff. And I don't just mean, like, you go on a level and are completing objectives to get stars. It's like, nah, like... You kind of get these puzzle pieces called jiggies, which, you know, I don't know where that comes from. But you're also collecting, like, notes and other things around the game. It's like, it gives you a whole lot of objectives at once. So, like, while you are looking to complete a specific objective, like fight a boss or whatever, or get to the top of a mountain, like, there's a bunch of these other little objectives you can do, and you're collecting all this stuff, and it's, like, it's just really fun. It keeps you really engaged. The whole time, you know, it seems like they're using these newer consoles and thinking a lot bigger than the platformers from the last generation.
You know, I think they may have got the jiggy thing from Big Willie Styles, you know, that album, Getting Jiggy With It, that song that's been on the radio a lot.
Ah, Will Smith.
Maybe there's a kind of synergy going on there.
How about you not make music and go back to acting after having made music?
I don't even know if he can act anymore. He's on his way out, I think.
Smith. I don't mean to speak out of turn, but how is Freshman's not going to be the highlight of that dude's career? Now it just seems sad, like rapping and stuff. Just, you know, get your friend to do the Carlton dance and move on. Like, retire gracefully.
Speaking of N64 shooters that should not exist, I totally forgot that South Park came out this year.
You know what? As I like South Park.
I think we can all forget about that and just move on.
It's better than you think. You shoot snowballs. It's there in Colorado.
Oh, I get it, because it's like the show.
It's all right. I'm going to stand by that game is okay.
Well, basically, I mean, I'll admit I have Turok 2. I buy any four-person shooting N64 game I can.
Why?
Because that's the only place I can get experience like that. If I have four people over, what are we going to do? We just want to, like, run around and shoot people in the face.
You already got Goldeneye. Who cares?
Yes, but I'm always looking for something new. I'll just say that.
And you're always disappointed by something new because Goldeneye is the bomb.
Yeah, okay, you're right.
Odd job.
Oh, I did not think you said odd job.
I said odd job. For the record.
Okay. But I want to bring up what I've been playing the most, probably of anything, and that's Pokemon Red still.
Yes.
Pokemon Blue.
Pokemon Blue.
Also blue, but.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, with my new Game Boy Color, I play Pokemon every chance I get.
Hold on. It has been almost 10 freaking years since that Game Boy came out.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first color upgrade. It's not even a graphic upgrade. It's just like, now there's colored. And it colorizes your old games, dude.
No.
I will admit this in front of you all for the first time.
What's that?
Did not own an original Game Boy.
Whoa!
Yeah,
the gray Game Boy.
You didn't
know all the colored ones. The Game Boy Pocket.
How'd you go on family trips with no Game Boy?
I have a Lynx and a Game Gear. But now I have a Game Boy Color and was playing Pokemon Red, and it's just totally awesome.
It's way better.
You cooking popcorn on the stove? What are you doing? Get a microwave, dude. Get a Game Boy.
But my stove popcorn is not like the Pop Secret that comes in all those different colors, which is way better than regular popcorn.
Oh, dude. I got one the other day. It was it had like this green dust, but the green dust was cheese flavored.
That's the one. It's green and pink.
Purple.
Oh, God. Give me some color popcorn. Give me some of that. But yeah,
I guess the lesson learned is that if you make things different colors, they become fun, because we've got colorized Game Boy that comes in different colors. We've got different color cartridges with the Pokemon games. Mm-hmm. That could be a trend that keeps going.
Now, let me.
I really like this year, not to totally derail our Pokemon conversation, but I will do it anyway. Speaking of Zelda, they re-released the Link's Awakening in like full color. And that game looks gorgeous.
Oh, the DX, right? Is that what it's
called? Yeah. Link's Awakening DX. And it's vivid colors. None of that fuzzy green and gray stuff anymore. Just bright, vivid. It's like playing a brand new game. I mean, it really feels.
That's actually the game that I got with my, when I bought my color. Like, it's just.
Oh, of course. That and Tetris, man. Those are the games.
Hmm.
But back to Pokemon. This is a really interesting game. I was surprised that I liked it. Because it looked dumb.
It does. It looks like it's for kids. And we are not kids anymore.
Nope.
I was amazed to see that something that has been apparently so successful in Japan. I don't know if you know this, but in Japan it's called Pocket Monsters. That's what the Pokemon stands for.
Oh, okay, I get
Pocket,
it.
Yeah. Like poke.
It's weird that it sounds more Japanese over here.
It does.
Doesn't it sound like Pocket Monster is the bad translation of the Japanese word?
It does.
Like a force fit, yeah.
Like monsters that are in your pocket and do battle for the forces. Buddy monsters. Right, yeah, exactly.
Handkerchief living monsters.
Right. But, I loved this game. I mean, this kept me riveted to my Game Boy. I would play this game everywhere I go. Get on the bus, play the game. You'd be sitting on the toilet in the bathroom, playing this game. Might as well.
It seems so simple. I don't know why they haven't put a really good role-playing game on the Game Boy before. I mean,
you got the Final Fantasy Legends, but they're not great.
I don't think they're very good, and I think that these are low graphics intensity games. Like, you know, Final Fantasy One still holds up really well. So the same with Dragon Warrior, and they don't look, you know, very good at all anymore.
And this is perfect too, because we're not going to get these 2D sprite RPGs anymore. Like, it's going the way of Quest 64 and Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, especially, I mean, who cares about Quest 64? But yeah, after a game like Final Fantasy VII, you're either going to have a game like Final Fantasy VII, which are these like big sweeping epics, or you're going to have a game like Baldur's Gate, which are these really, you know, nitty gritty, you know, inspired by tabletop gamings, which are just, you know, the algorithms behind it are just so complicated and sophisticated. I don't know if they could fit it on a handheld like a Game Boy, but to have these, you know, I'm not done playing games like Final Fantasy II or Chrono Trigger or something, and I think the Game Boy and handheld platforms in general could be a place where this type of gaming could live on.
Chrono Trigger on the Game Boy. I'm calling it. I want it. Give it to me.
We'll see.
You know, hey, hold on. Crazy things have happened. Metroid 2 was on the Game Boy. Chrono Trigger 2, which you know they're going to make, got to come out. I mean, the Game Boy would be a logical place to put it.
It's because the colors are going to suck, though.
Yeah.
But they'll figure it. I mean, they could figure it out.
They could figure it out.
I am no game designer.
And, you know, some games look pretty good on Super Game Boy, too, if you guys have that for your SNESs.
I love, in fact, that's where I play Pokemon Blue the most. And when you plug it in, not only is those, like, each different town has a different color, there's a specific Pokemon border around it, which mm-hmm. is built into the, which was really cool. Yeah, I love it. It looks great.
I would like everyone to go around and tell me what their game of the year was. I mean, if it could be something that we've talked about already, or it could be something that we haven't, but, you know, I know what mine is, and I want to hear what your game of the year was. Kevin, Jamie, anyone?
Oh, I'll start. Yeah, so I blew the load at the beginning, but Baldur's Gate, that's my game of the year. It's a game that I've just played so much of, and as someone who had played tabletop RPGs for a while, it was everything that I wanted in a kind of narrative. I liked the interface. I thought that it was, you know, it felt more sophisticated than a lot of the RPGs I was used to. And I had played FF7 and those supposedly adult ones, but this one, to me, shows that the RPG is still viable, you know, and will continue to grow as I do.
Fallout 2. Like I said, that game is fantastic. I've played through it a couple times now. I like trying to go through with different types of characters. I've gone through with hand-to-hand only. I've gone through with sniper guys, and it's just, it's so great. And the fact that they could bring out a sequel so quickly after the first one and have it be so good and just not sweeping change, but just a little bit better in every way is really exciting. I can't wait for Fallout 3, you know, next year, just more of the same.
I already said, for me, Ocarina of Time, and there's not a close number two. I'm such a Zelda fan. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've played Link to the Past in Zelda 1 and Link's Awakening. So to get a game where you're already excited simply based on the characters and the premise, and it totally blows away everything that's come before. I mean, just in the scope of the game, in the look of, I think, really every video game out on the market, that kept me engrossed, that was extremely challenging but felt fair, and that I wasn't throwing my controller against the wall except in the water temple. I just feel like I said, there's not a close number two for me. I mean, it's a game that I think I could play again and again and again and again, and I'm scared. I'm scared to see where they go from here, because I don't know what they would do to make that series better.
So my game of the year is actually the one that we have not talked about, and that would be Half-Life. Say, this came out like a little, you know, like a month-ish ago, and I have never played a first-person game that's like this. So typically, your first-person shooting game is going to be like Doom or Unreal. There's just going to be a lot of bad guys all around, and you're just constantly just trudging on toward the goal, whatever it may be, you know, and the story is kind of whatever. Like there is a story, the premise for why you're shooting everyone, but it's not really that important. And what Half-Life did was, you know, take the world around you and make that the story. So it doesn't have Final Fantasy VII cut scenes where, you know, the quality changes and then all of a sudden it's this like full motion video. It has the characters on screen like walking around and talking to each other, and then they talk to you. You're playing as Gordon Freeman, who's this like doctor, scientist guy in a lab as everything's like blowing up, and the world just happens around you, and you're kind of like caught in the middle of that and trapped. And yeah, there's like awesome shooting and stuff, and you can hit head crabs with a crowbar, which is, yeah, that's totally awesome. But I way preferred Half-Life to something like Unreal or Quake 2 or Thief. Even if Thief has more of a story, just Half-Life is totally awesome. And if you guys haven't played it yet, I know it just came out, but if you haven't played it yet, you totally should, because this is a great game.
I've given it a try, and my first impressions are not good. I mean, I think the crowbar is a lot of fun, and there's no denying it looks great. But this is another game I just think I think it's too hard. I don't think the controls work very well. It doesn't seem to me like there's enough ammo, that there's enough health in the game. I don't really understand what I'm doing. Like, the story doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. You know, it seems like it might be too ambitious from that standpoint. I don't know how accessible it's going to be to, again, the people who are playing Doom and stuff like that. And I appreciate them trying, because I am at this point kind of over those games. But maybe just because I'm not used to how precise you need to be to, you know. It seems like there's a lot of jumping puzzles in this game, which I do not think work well in a first-person game. I think the enemies are too hard in this game. I just feel like I just can't really get into it. I don't want to say it's, you know, I don't feel about it like I feel like Metal Gear Solid, which I feel like the controls are so bad and like the view is, it's almost broken. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that way about Half-Life. I just feel like I don't understand what I'm supposed to be doing. Maybe it's just the learning curve is too steep, but so far I've not really been able to get into it.
Has this game been really well received by magazines and stuff? I haven't really been reading recently.
Oh, so yeah.
It's got really stellar reviews.
So I think, do I have it open?
PC Gamer gave it, I mean, something incredible.
Let's see if I have it here. I know it was up for one of GameSpot's Game of the Years. Let's see. Oh, Kesey. Oh, this is just a GamePro review. These freaking magazines. Here's the thing that I hate. These freaking magazines have to be printed so far in advance that I get a preview in the December issue of GamePro of Half-Life, a game that's already out and I've played. That's why, you know.
Yeah, at least legit though. I don't like those video game websites. I mean, it just seems like they're run on a shoestring budget. They look weird. You know, I just...
Oh, yeah. They're so crappy looking. You're never going to beat the look and the design of a magazine and how much you can fit in here. Cause
I just feel like I've been...
Print media in general is so much more robust and capable of delivering information.
And it's cheap. I've been subscribing to GamePro for 9 years. It's still $20 a year. That's less than $2 an issue. It comes right to my door. It's a big, thick thing with great info, cheat codes.
I mean, look at this. This thing is... It's huge, this magazine.
Well, I'll tell you why. It's because they haven't figured out how to advertise well using the internet yet. So, you know, if these websites could make money, they might look different, you know?
How can they figure out how to advertise? I mean, like, in a magazine, you can take up the whole page. Like, I have to look at it. I mean, what are you going to do on a website? Like, you can't just, like pop something up on the screen or make the whole screen change or something else. It's not going to go to your website anymore.
No, I mean, there's got to be something. I mean, there's going to be a way to make money off everything, right?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. If they can make money off of it, somebody will find a way.
But yeah, I agree. You know, the magazines are pretty great. Except, you know, sometimes the screenshots too. That since you said they print it so early, sometimes you get screenshots that aren't even in the finished game. That's
right.
That's weird experience too.
But I just think that everybody's got to deal with that. I mean, unless they could, you know, video games are big enough. There was like a weekly publication or a bi-weekly, like a TV Guide or an Entertainment Weekly or Variety or something like that.
I mean, you have to give GameSpot is in its first year. Like I know it was called something else before. I don't know when it came out, but it was called something else before, and now it's the website. And we have to just imagine that it's going to get better. Like that they're going to be able to look like a magazine.
I think one of two things is going to happen. It's either going to get better or it's going to go away. I mean, right? I mean, I don't even know if they're making money.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just like caught up in this strategy guide for Metal Gear Solid. God, I love these things. Magazines. Love them. Put me on record. Love magazines.
I put it in my wax record recording device.
All right, this is good. So we've been having kind of like a little discussion about this. And I want to go back to one of the discussion points that Jay wanted to raise earlier, which is video game cartridges versus discs. Now, we're not talking about PC, because obviously PC games are going to come on a disc. That's how you play them. But
yeah, and you install them too. Yeah, so it's like
PlayStation versus Nintendo 64. Pros, cons. What is this debate all about?
It's about the N64 rocks and the PlayStation is garbage.
I don't know about that, man. You know, I got to say that I was reading something, I think it was in GamePro, and you can actually fit more on a disc than you can in a cartridge, like in terms of raw data. So if they found a faster way to load it, maybe it could be equivalent.
But who needs games that big? Like, why can't your game fit on a cartridge?
Because they're putting all these cutscenes in. That's why, right? The videos.
Because it's not a piece of shit like Quest 64.
But Ocarina, Ocarina fits on a cartridge.
Right. And there's a lot in there. Here's the thing. You pick up Ocarina, it is a substantially heavy cartridge. A CD has a fixed amount of data you can hold. A cartridge, you can shove more memory in there. And as silicon gets cheaper and cheaper, I mean, cartridges are going to be able to hold an ever-expanding amount of data. And while the PlayStation is fixed with however much a CD can hold, the N64, as technology gets better and they can fit more chips inside each individual cartridge or even, you know, have some kind of expansion, like, we're going to be able to take more and more advantage of, like, real hardware. I really think that's where things
Well, here's the thing. You can just it's cheap to print a disc, so you can just have two or three discs in a game. You know, that's no problem.
It's and also it costs less. Cheap to bootleg a disc, too.
Well, you know, China, who's playing games, you know, in countries that do bootleg?
We're ripping stuff at 1X, 2X. You sit there for, you know, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 90 minutes, and you get a perfect copy of a game. I mean, there's software already you can get that does that. I mean, maybe not everybody on the street knows how to do that, but I think, you know, people like free shit. And if you're telling people, like, hey, you can go rent a game and then just burn it, whatever.
No, that's why you got to put, like, some sort of code in the manual that you have to look up, some sort of table.
Yeah, some
just
of the,
like,
some
you know,
of the
a string of numbers that you generate based on something the game asks. Oh, that's decent copy protection.
People will just put those in, like, pro tip books or whatever, or, like, put it on, like, a message board, like a Usenet or something like that. You just go on ICQ and you like say, like, hey, why do I get this code? Someone's gonna know. I just don't think the security's there. I think that, you know, I just don't think it's good for the consumer. I don't think it's good for the business. I mean, for the consumer standpoint, these load times are awful. And yes, maybe in the future they could get better. But
and they're better than
Sega
CD, though. They've gotten better. They have gotten better.
But they
Jay, what if there's a way you could load everything at the beginning of a game?
Mm-hmm.
And then you didn't have to do that.
Well, that's kind of like
what if you put some sort of like a hard drive?
That's like the Nintendo 64 DD, right?
Yeah, but
yeah, I've seen pictures of that.
Hard drives are so expensive, and you know, video game consoles are already. I mean, they already cost $300 bucks. I mean, if they put a hard drive in there, how much do you think it would cost? It's not like they're just giving this stuff away.
Well, I mean, you don't have to. Like, you could buy, like, the thing and add it on. It connects to the expansion port on the 64.
That's never going to work. I mean, even go back to the Nintendo with, like, the power pad and stuff. You know, nobody's going to make any games for that because people are going to make games for what they know the largest user base has. Hmm. Okay? I just don't think that's going to work.
I guess. I don't know. I think the 64 DD, you know, could be okay.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I guess. I trust Nintendo. It seems like they've got a better track record. You know, when Star Fox came out, Star Fox 64, that is, they put the Rumble Pack in, and it seems like they've really done a good job of making a lot of their games use that Rumble Pack since.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's going to be a trend, though, the Rumble thing? I think it's just a gimmick, you know? It just, you know, makes your
Yeah, hands. You know, it's definitely a gimmick, but I think it adds something tangible to the game. I mean, I think it, like, I don't know. I personally really like it. I think it maybe could be a little bit more subtle, but that tangibility is something I really like. You know, for me though, my biggest gripe with CD-based games and why I'm kind of hesitant to get behind the DD, too, is memory cards. You know, when I buy a Nintendo 64 game, you know, it's like I can just stick in my game, save it right there, not have to worry about it. Memory card is like, oh good. Like, I buy my PlayStation and a game, and I can't really do anything with it. I mean, every game you have to save something, right? So you've got to go spend money on another little accessory they can nickel and dime you for. There's only 15 save slots, which, you know, you think there's like 3 save slots a game. So every 5 games, you got to go buy another one of these dinky little things.
You can get third-party cards that have more slots. They look different, but, you know.
But who trusts those? Who trusts third-party anything?
Like Mad Cats, people like that. I don't know.
But
I don't do that.
You're not always going to be able to fit saves on Nintendo 64 cartridges. Like, you know, I think you're going to have to put in the Rumble.
Quest 64, you've got to use a memory card for.
Right. So, you know, I think that in the future, more of those games are going to use memory cards, and that the memory card thing is going to be irrelevant.
It seems like a scam. I think it's a scam to sell you more junk.
Well, do you think that they could fit them on a disc or
I think they could. I mean, we've got computers that can write discs. I mean, think about it. When you bought your Nintendo, what'd you get? 2 controllers, a gun, and 2 games. When you bought your N64, what'd you get? A controller. You know, pretty soon you're not going to get a controller. They're going to make you buy all kinds of extra memory. They're probably not going to sell them with a processor anymore. You're going to have to like go buy your processor separate and install it. You just buy like a plastic box. It's going to be ridiculous.
Build your own Nintendo.
No, they could. If they could nickel and dime you, they would.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that that disc will catch on. Because if you heard about this thing on the Dreamcast, they're called GD-ROMs, and they've got more space than a CD. So, you know, you're going to start seeing really big games.
Goddamn ROMs.
Yeah, you call it what you want.
GD-ROMs! You
know, just wait a year or two. You'll see them.
Can I use this moment to read an article from the guy who made Mario, Shigeru Miyamoto?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, this is from the August 98. This is the second issue of Game Buyer magazine. It's one of the new magazines. And it says, Shigeru Miyamoto plays Karnak the Magnificent. Famed Nintendo developer predicts the future of gaming. In a recent interview with Shigeru Miyamoto, he revealed his predictions for the future of gaming. He believes that normal distribution channels will be replaced by a network in which game buyers can purchase their software via satellite or over the telephone circuit by an ISDN line motherboard. Miyamoto felt that 5 or 6 years ago, this type of idea would have only been a dream, but soon it will be realized. He forecasted that if the future network technology is refined, then traditional distribution methods will disappear. The Nintendo strategy has apparently been to make games as great-looking as possible and to think things out while making the game. He gives credence to the fact that it's of the it's of the utmost importance to abide by this when making games. It's easy to forget this, but necessary when coming up with new games. Miyamoto sees that gamers will go to the international route, emphasizing that Japanese developers, quote, should recognize that there is an international market out there. This is important for Nintendo as well as the rest of the industry. In this way, those overseas can come to understand our culture. The evolution of consoles will depend on the developers, flair for inventions, according to Miyamoto. Games will evolve depending on these inventions. Of course, one would think that progressions would be made in the future anyway, but unfortunately new inventions are few and far between. He feels that graphical evolution will be conceived on a different level, such as how Nintendo 64 can be linked with the Game Boy. Shigeru Miyamoto predicts that our predictions will probably come true, as his foresight and vision have brought it from Nintendo, Donkey Kong, to Zelda 64.
I mean, you think that's true? You think it's going to happen?
You know, I don't know. I honestly don't. I mean, obviously, everybody knows Miyamoto's pedigree, but I don't know how much influence he has on, you know, like the business side of the company. I mean, Nintendo is a great company, and I couldn't be a bigger fan. But I mean, if we're being realistic, they're a company that relies on the strength of its franchises, and they, you know, slowly and very well exploit all their franchises: Donkey Kong, Mario, Zelda, Kirby, Metroid, now Pokemon. I do not see them being risk takers. It seems like they're in a pretty good heat with the PlayStation. You know, I know they're certainly not as dominant as they were in the NES days, but they are a thriving, you know, easily I think the number one or like tied for number one. In the video game market, I don't see any reason they would change their model right now. I mean, again, I just think the Dreamcast seems too risky, you know, with their focus on a built-in modem and stuff. I don't see that console succeeding. It seems like there's too many eggs in one basket with their weird memory cards with pictures in them and trying to hope that games will come online. It's like putting jack of all trades, master of none. It's like Nintendo's got a good thing going. I don't necessarily see them stepping out and doing anything crazy like what he's talking about.
Yeah, it's like that. I think that Sega should have gone back to what they did with the Genesis and really just rely on, you know, focusing on the strengths of what is out there right now. You know, for controllers like Nintendo, do cartridges, like you could put the modem in, but I don't see what you're going to do online with those kinds of things. Like if I want to play a game with other people, I'm going to play it on my computer, not on my couch. But, you know, I wonder if maybe Nintendo didn't put CDs on the Nintendo 64 because they know that, you know, the next one that they come out with is just going to be connected to the web and then you could, you know, get your games there.
Right. You get your games on the web or play your games on the web?
No, just you get your games on the web. Like Japanese games, like they don't have to ship them over because they just upload them and then, you know, you go online.
No.
And I mean, we have to imagine that like modems are going to like double in speed.
Dude, we just talked about this like 10 minutes ago. How expensive are hard drives? Like, where are you going to put these games?
But right.
if you have like a stack of blank cartridges you burn them to?
Yeah.
Even if modem speeds increase, I mean, most of my friends don't even have the internet in their house. And if they do, you know, like, what am I going to unplug the phone line from my computer and like my systems, like my TV in the basement is not in the same room as that.
I mean, you could maybe download overnight or something. I don't know.
Imagine everyone's like,
yeah, I'll just run a big cord, like a big phone cord.
Everyone is downloading video games and no one can get phone calls anymore.
Yeah. So 911 just gets blocked. Downloading some games.
Don't mind me.
Well, I don't know. I think there will be some alternate distribution. Maybe they'll set up something in a store where you can go get a game on a blank cartridge, so they don't have to ship it all over. You know.
Yeah, but at that point, why bother? Like,
get you in the store still. I don't know, something like that.
God, I'm looking at this awesome Ultra Game Machine. It's the FX6 400 by Mega Image. Like, I don't even know who they are, but God damn, $2,025.
Oh.
And it comes with a monitor and speakers with a subwoofer.
Okay, that's pretty reasonable, I think, for a desktop.
400 megahertz Pentium 2 processor, 64 megabytes of RAM, 8.4 gigabytes hard drive.
Nice
gigabytes.
See, there you go. You could put 20 games on that.
I've got on this machine. I've got about 2 gigabytes.
So as long as Nintendo,
those Pentium 2s are sweet too.
If Nintendo could get people to buy $2,000 computers in a little gray box, they would be okay.
Yeah, but I mean, still, they're selling $250 consoles right now.
This stuff is awesome. Oh, I love just looking at this stuff. I'm never going to have a computer this good.
Yeah. I know. I'm just, you know, maybe when I go to college, I'll get my own computer or something. But right now, it's just the old family clunker.
All right, shall we move on?
Yeah, let's do that.
Sure.
All right, so this is something that we came up with. Guys?
Yeah?
Yeah, what did we come up with?
Oh.
What did you come up with?
Sorry, it just went like completely silent.
I was just thinking about hard drives.
It's like, so guys, the craziest thing happened to me today.
No, it went silent. I thought that, and like Kevin was sitting so still that I thought he froze.
Oh yeah, I'm just
guys.
Guys,
okay. What were you gonna say, man?
Go ahead.
All right. So everyone loves reading their magazines.
Go ahead, Bobby. Go ahead.
Everyone loves reading their magazines. Flip to the back. They flip to the front. Always somewhere.
I always flip to the back first and do the fold in.
Yeah. Those are funny.
But no matter where you look in a magazine, one of the cool things that they have is a list. So this week we have...
Good morning, Captain. Well, good morning to you.
The list for the year end, 1998.
bowlist.
And what we decided to do was to throw it back a decade. Focus on the Nintendo, the NES. We've been through two consoles since then from Nintendo, and I wanted to know what everyone's five favorite most awesome weapons were from NES games. So that is this week's The List.
It's a great list choice. I love The List. Everybody knows that it's list time. I can't get enough of this song. This is the best. Bobby, you've totally turned me on to this song.
Turned you on.
Dude, this song. Guys. To this.
Oh. Yeah, I got this from someone in an AOL chat room. It's totally awesome.
The quality is really good. What file format is that?
Is that one of those MP3s mm-hmm. you've been telling me about?
It's all MP3s right. playing on Winamp.
It's like just like a CD. Yeah.
Yeah, it's CD quality audio, but it's just like a file. But it's not like a MIDI. It's like a real, it sounds like a CD. Yeah. Totally awesome. But this week's The List.
So who wants to start?
Who's starting? Should our guest start?
Yeah, absolutely.
We can.
All right.
All right, guests talk at the same time.
All right. My number one.
Okay, James, you, Jimmy, you go.
Okay, I'm going to lead it off. I'm going to choose something that I hope will generate debate because I think you could legitimately argue whether or not it is a weapon. I firmly believe that it is a weapon, and that is Kuribo Shoe.
Yes, good choice.
Mario 3.
Damn it, you son of a bitch. Already, that's one where it's better than every one of my choices.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, oh list so over. Thanks. Good. Thanks for listening
that's
to
so
the list.
Good. List. All right, that's it.
yeah, talk.
I mean, I don't know. Do I have to say anything else?
You got a goddamn
giant shoe that you jump around in.
Yes, here's the scene. You're in Mario 3, World 5-3. There are spikes you got to cross. How are you going to do it? Go.
I will probably try to jump and then maybe die. If I touch spikes.
Does not work. Try again.
Do I have a raccoon tail that I could perhaps fly over?
No tails.
P-wing.
P-wing. No Tanuki suit.
What about invincibility star? Do I have a superstar?
No, none of those.
Nope. And you can't warp through it.
Then there is no possible way to get past these spikes.
What if there was a Goomba jumping around in a giant green shoe?
That you haven't seen before, and you're like, what's that?
What would you do?
What if there were a way to lure him onto an overhead block and then jump on that block, knocking him out of the shoe? Can I get in his shoe? That's stupid. Oh. You can't get in his shoe.
Well, you could get in, you got to get him out of there first. But yeah. Once you did that, you could certainly get in his shoe.
There's no way that shoe's going to protect him from the spikes.
Oh, it's absolutely will. He's a good shoe.
Have you ever walked on anything?
For walking.
Yeah. Have you ever walked on anything sharp in a pair of shoes?
Done.
Why would you do that?
Have you ever tried to step out like into the street and you're like in bare feet and you're like, man, this asphalt, there's like all this gravel and like stuff. This really hurts my feet. But if you walk out there in your sneakers, you'd be like, hey, this ain't so bad. This is all right.
And you can jump higher too?
Absolutely. You can jump higher. It's because you have a little key sticking out of you.
That makes me jump higher.
Yep.
So you just got to twist that key up. That's the best. I don't know. We've got 19 more choices, and I don't know what's going to be.
My list goes way downhill from there.
Yeah, you should save that.
I'll give you guys one that's both legitimate and really good, and I think it may be on other lists. We'll see. And that is the spread gun in Contra.
My list.
That's not my list.
Not on my list.
Whoa!
The
only way to easily beat Contra is with the spread gun. It shoots.
It's the best gun in Contra, yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it makes your life so much easier. If you have any other gun, you're sadly disillusioned. It's the best thing to have in Contra. What do you think?
I agree. Bobby and I, think, both agree since we put it on our lists.
Yes. I mean, you know, when it comes down to it, like if I'm ever going to beat Contra, it's going to be with
it. You can do it.
No way, man. That game's way too impossible.
You can do it without the code. Yeah, you can.
No way.
I can't do it with the code.
You got to memorize it. I've seen someone do it before.
But, I mean,
it's where the enemies are.
Those vertical levels are too hard.
Maybe I should just hook up my Nintendo again and give it a go.
Just keep trying it.
But, yeah, it's going to be with the spread gun. It covers the entire screen. I would just sit there with my turbo controller, hold down the turbo button, just take care of everything. Spread gun. Good choice.
right.
Jason?
Okay, well, I picked the Metal Blades from Mega Man 2.
On my list.
All right.
You picked them.
How could they not? I mean, this is probably the best Mega Man weapon ever. For games that are so hard, really overly powerful. Useful on a lot of bosses and through the vast majority of Dr. Wily stages. Multi-directional, super fun. What else do you got to add?
If you're playing this game, like I know if you read Nintendo Power, they will tell you what order you should beat all of the bosses in. And you
Bubble Man start first.
Yeah. No, Metal Man.
You just start with Metal Man because
it's not that hard.
It's not hard, and you're going to use that weapon throughout the entire game. So yeah, definitely the Metal Blade is the way to go.
Use up like two lines for every like giant metal like gear thing that you shoot out. Like so good. You can shoot a million of those. Because some of those Mega Man weapons you get, you can shoot it like four times before you're out of energy. That's no
Quick
good.
Man.
Yeah.
So yeah, I picked Metal Blades. So Bobby, 2 years are gone.
Yeah, this is going All very right.
quick list.
Yeah. This is going very quickly. Of course, my favorite whip from Castlevania 2 is going to be the strongest whip, the Flame Whip.
I put that one on.
Yes, you did. Yep. Like, I will just cheat the game and enter the code so that I can have the Flame Whip from the beginning because it's so powerful. And I love, like, the animation of it. I love just killing people with it. I don't know what else to say. Like, best weapon of a really fun game.
I mean, and you know, the other Castlevanias, they don't have whips that look quite as awesome. Although the Symphony of the Night game has some cool stuff, but still the Flame Whip, you know, you can't compete.
Yeah,
I like Symphony of the Night a lot, but it's a totally different beast than the first three Castlevanias.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So,
all right, is that me again?
Yep.
It is. All right.
I have a question for you, gentlemen. Have you ever played a little Spy versus Spy?
No, I haven't.
I've read the comic, but.
Exactly. The fold in at the back. I love
that. Yeah, fold in at the back. There is a video game in the Nintendo Entertainment System of Spy versus Spy.
Who do you play as?
Spy.
Oh, that's he.
Who do you play against?
Favorite. He's my favorite.
Other Spy.
Oh. Okay.
Now, that's just set up. It is a. I guess there's a single player mode, but you can't play it two player. You know, one is Black Spy, one is White Spy. You're set up in this sort of little grid building. It's like a block of rooms. And you go through there trying to recover these three items, and then once you get them all, you want to run outside and get on your plane and go back to Spyland or whatever. And the way you hinder your opponent's progress is setting these booby traps. So you can put you can electrify a door. You can set time bombs. And you can set all of these in places where you're supposed to be looking to find the items. And the best booby trap that you can set, in my opinion, is the spring, which is just a big goddamn spring that will pop out when you open a door and will rocket you like across the room. If the door on the opposite wall is open, you will shoot through that into the previous room. It's really fun. It's a totally stupid weapon in a really stupid game, but great if you like just making life miserable for the person you're playing with.
Well, that sounds good to me. And I have to admit that my next choice is similar to your first choice, and that is, you know, a lot of people wouldn't isolate this as a weapon, the huge boot in Battletoads. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
yes,
I do. Yeah, that's good.
Yes.
After you hit and, you know, kind of stun some dudes in Battletoads, if you do the right sequence, the most common sequence, your huge boot will sometimes come and kick the living daylights out of your opponent, sometimes knocking them all the way across the screen. But in general, it's just, you know, over the top, out of this world. And I figure I got some footwear in there somewhere, so huge boot.
Sweet. That was not on my list.
I've got a lot of... Well, I'll go with a more solid one. From Metroid, I picked the bomb.
Okay. Classic.
All right. And the reason I thought about it for a long time. At first, I was like, is this lame? Because, I mean, it's an early weapon. It's kind of so identified with the game. But I like it because it's so unique, and it is simultaneously a weapon and a tool. I mean, you can use it to chain them together to jump up real high. You can use it to kind of get enemies down on the ground where your gun can't go. And I don't, I can't think of anything else like it anywhere else. You know, it's such a defining weapon for that game, that kind of exploration where, like, you know, like other weapons, when you get like the ice beam and stuff, that aids in both killing dudes and exploration.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that idea behind it. And I basically picked it because of how different it was and how much it stood out for me playing a lot of these games.
Well, speaking of different weapons, one I chose was something that we, at least when the NES came out, like other games didn't have it. And that's the yo-yo from Star Tropics.
Got it.
All right. I thought about it.
I didn't do it either, but I thought about it.
Oh, you got it. Yeah. So I, you know, in Earthbound, they used a yo-yo, or you could use a yo-yo, but it wasn't, you know, your primary weapon. Yeah. But yeah, you start off with yo-yo in Star Tropics, and like what better way to use like a Dunkin' yo-yo than to swing it out and hit people in the face.
Dude, you're hitting snakes and stuff. You're just like,
have you ever imagined what it'd be like to like throw a yo-yo at an actual snake?
It'd be impossible.
It'd be so hard.
I can barely like walk the dog and stuff. I was watching Mother's Brothers the other day. Like, tell you what, it was impossible. They were doing things.
Yes, Mother's Brothers are hilarious.
Hilarious.
Funny. I've got a tape and where they do yo-yo tricks, and it's great.
Well, there's that whole sequence in that Simpsons episode where they
still have it.
Where the you know, there's the yo-yo people who come to the school and do tricks too, and that was probably my first. It was in syndication last night. Episode.
All right, back to Jimmy.
Oh, back to me. Okay. I have another Battletoads weapon, and that is the like little robot leg that you rip off those robots and then beat people with.
Okay. Like when you're on that level where you're descending, right? You can kind of, or on multiple levels.
No, I was thinking like the first level. You know, there are those little like robot walkers that come up, and if you punch them enough, they break into parts, and you take their leg. And you hit other people with that leg.
Okay. Yeah.
So like some sort of weapon, a cudgel, if you will, or club.
Stick. Yeah.
So, Jimmy, what's your opinion on Battletoads? Do you like it? Do you not? What's your
Battletoads? I am for it.
Against it. That game is dumb. People who like that game are dumb. It is way too hard. If you plugged your Nintendo back in and you played that game, just try it.
The sewer level where you're driving.
I'm not denying that it's hard, but that is a fun game.
It is pretty fun, I guess.
Kevmon.
Okay, well, so you took my my Castlevania one, which was number three. Number four, and this is one I'm pretty sure no one else has, are the missiles from Narc.
No.
You guys play the game Narc?
Yeah.
I'm confident in your assumption nobody else has that.
Okay, well, Narc is a game, a special game. It was in the arcades. It ties in with former First Lady Reagan's crusade against drugs. It's a game where you play a narcotics officer who enforces drug laws with guns and bullets by killing drug cartels. And talk about violent video games. This is more than Mortal Kombat 2. You shoot a missile at a drug dealer, their limbs explode. Their whole body explodes. It's almost like something out of Quake, you know?
Yeah. Hey,
I'm just saying.
All I know is this. If there's one thing I've learned from video games, it's that winners don't use drugs.
Yeah.
That's okay? True.
Street Fighter
that
2
is true.
Tells you that.
So, it just sounds like these people are getting their comeuppance.
Yeah, it's moral. It's the moral law of the jungle. That's what it is. But the missile is the best way to enforce it.
I wonder if they still have those signs on like the new Marvel vs. Capcom arcade games. I haven't been to an arcade in forever, but
I don't. Do you think so? I played that. I played Star Wars too, and they don't have that Star Wars trilogy game. We didn't talk about that. That game is awesome.
Wouldn't know.
Oh, so good,
Jason.
Okay, I have one that might. I don't know if it counts, but I think it counts. And that's the gun from Duck Hunt.
I thought about this, and I say it counts. Yes.
I think it's the flashes of light. I think that's the weapon. I don't think the gun has anything to do with it.
No, bullshit. You're using a gun. You kill ducks.
Yeah, but I mean, there's no gun on screen, but if there's no gun, I don't know how those ducks are dying.
Flashes of light. They're epileptic. No, that's fine. I'm just kidding. It's totally allowed.
To me, you know, it's such a great pack-in with the NES because, I mean, Mario Bros. Obviously is a great game you can play a million times, but Duck Hunt is such a simple idea that you can keep coming back to again and again and again. And I've played Hogan's Alley and, you know, the few other Light Gun games out, but some about Duck Hunt just stays with you. The sound that the gun makes, the feel that that click of the, you know, gun makes in your hand is awesome. I mean, like, the more guns need to have, like, that Light Gun game like that. Like, I'm waiting for when they can make, like, a shooter, like, where they can put controls on it so I can move around and shoot as opposed to just shooting it at...
Now, do you have the orange gun or do you have the gray gun?
I have the orange gun. I am not as cool.
Gray
as
gun.
I know.
Get in on the ground floor before they have to differentiate it.
I don't have a gray gun. I don't have Rob. I have an orange gun. And...
Stop saying it like that.
You don't have gyromite.
Gyromite.
I have an orange gun.
Yes, that's how you say it.
I have the orange gun.
Aren't you glad you have the gray gun?
Yeah, aren't you glad I didn't say banana again?
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say that I'm going to skip mine because I've already done three since two of mine were taken.
I've only got one left.
I only have one left.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. It seemed like they went faster then.
We had a lot of overlap.
Yes, so my next favorite, I mean, this is, I like it because it's stupid, but they are the cannonballs from the ship in Jaws.
Okay. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
It's just like, that's how I'm going to go out and kill a shark. I'm going to go into the ocean, I'm just going to shoot heavy things and hope it lands on them. Thankfully, my world is in 2D so that I could actually do that, because if it's in 3D, I'm like totally screwed. But yeah,
stuff like that makes me think how did pirates really work? Like, if you were on a ship trying to shoot another ship, that just seems impossible.
It does.
Like, in real life, like, that seems so freaking hard.
That's why you shoot a lot and just hope something hits.
Yeah
but that's... Yeah. I don't know. It takes a long... Wouldn't it take a long time to load up a cannonball? I don't know a lot about cannonball physics, but I would think it'd take a long time to load up a cannonball, like, load up the necessary, like, explosive into there and shoot it.
I think it takes about a minute.
You have clearly...
That's a long time, dude.
You've clearly never been on the Pirates of Caribbean ride, because in there it's as simple as...
They're all drunk as fuck.
Dude leans forward and he leans back and then flash of light, just like a Duck Hunt gun.
Yeah, flash of light. Yeah. And then they've all got, like, you know, big mugs in their hand, and then it gets scary for a little bit, but then it's all okay at the end.
Dude, spoilers. Straight up, that ride, they should make a movie out of that ride.
No, that's the dumbest ride at
How
Disney.
Can you make a movie out of a ride?
That's the dumbest. That's a dumb.
It's Thunder Mountain Railroad, the movie.
That ride looks like it was made 100 years ago in a ship.
That ride is awesome, but to make a movie out of it is stupid. They should make a movie out of Space Mountain. I would see that.
Dude, yeah. Tell me about it, man.
When I went to Disneyland as a little kid, my dad made us buy a toy rifle before we went on the Pirates of the Caribbean.
So that you could shoot them.
Defend herself against pirates.
Yes.
Law-abiding citizen.
Your dad is great.
So you have one more, Jimmy?
I do have one more. And again, I'm not... I think this one is debatable about a weapon if you guys want to disallow it. But I said your robot arm from Bionic Commando.
No, that is most assuredly a weapon.
Yeah, right. That's fine.
You can't... Hold on. You can kill people with that, right?
Ooh.
Excuse me. You okay?
I don't think directly, though.
Really? I haven't played
it in a long, long time.
Informed decision.
It assists you in the killing in general, so maybe it's...
I feel like if you had a robot grappling arm and you aimed it at a human being and you said go, it would hurt them a lot. So that seems weapon-like enough to me.
Yeah. That was my thinking.
Okay, well, I let it slide. My last one is both a hygiene thing and a weapon, and that is the trash can from River City Ransom. The idea being that it's something that you can kind of hit people with or throw, and it's an everyday object.
I thought about that.
Yeah, you know, it's a good weapon in the game, too. So talking about multiple functions, and if kids want to play along at home, they can go outside and pick up those tin trash cans and throw them at their brother. You know, it works out for me. That's my last one.
Nice.
Okay, it seems like we're all picking odd ones for our last one. And I picked one of my favorite NES games is a game that no one seems to have played. It's Super Dodgeball.
Oh, I love that game.
And I picked the dodgeball from Super Dodgeball.
That is a weapon.
It's a dangerous dodgeball, yeah.
Because there, to me, it's all about the sound and the feel about making contact. You know, to me, that game is so hard, particularly in later levels. Like, the feeling when you just throw that dodgeball and you make contact, it's like, boom, and then the guy's just like, and goes back like that, which people could not see me act out.
I was going to say, way to go.
It seems like the sprite slows down real bad, and like it's back. It feels like so visceral and just like, yes, I just got that guy. Just really like, that's that tactile feeling that a lot of games strive for. And
that's where the rumble pack would help, right?
Yeah, you don't even need it. I mean, it would make it better. But like, I'm already rumbling just because of my excitement. I can't even like contain it, you know? So Dodgeball, Super Dodgeball.
So the last one that I picked was the game or the weapon that you need to beat the game in Dragon Warrior, and that's Eldric's sword.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, you're going through the games, you start out with something stupid like a bamboo pole, and you know, by the time you get to the end, you have the most just amazing like possible weapon, and there's no other way to beat the game. And of course, like, it ties into like the story and Eldric and all that stuff, but you know, it is the gift that you get so that you can beat the game. Had I not had them spoiled for me, I would have been able to give that one earlier and save like spread for last, but I should have known better, damn it. But that game is really hard. I don't know if you've ever beat it.
It's so slow, even next to Final Fantasy I, you know. I have trouble just sitting down and doing it.
See, I can't play like Final Fantasy I. That's way too slow for me. Cause at least I know Dragon War. It's like, here's this like one little map and I can just move around.
Yeah. It seems like I like Final Fantasy better because I think the story is a little more engaging. But Final Fantasy also has a lot of level grinding. I think it's a much tougher game.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a learning curve in both. Like the first time you play Dragon War, you learn that if you go too far without gaining levels, you die instantly.
Oh yeah.
And in Final Fantasy, you go too deep into like, you know, the Earth dungeon, you die pretty quickly if you don't have enough potions. So in both cases, once you kind of know what to do,
I was just like, you know, Dragon Warrior, just one dude. Final Fantasy, you're four dudes, and you can pick your dudes.
And they change in the middle of the game, kind of. You know, they upgrade. Yeah.
They upgrade. Right. Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. I say after like the other Dragon Warriors they put out on NES, I don't think we're gonna get any more of those. I think that's dead in the water.
Yeah, I was playing Dragon Warrior 3 the other day, and that one's pretty good. But those NES Dragon Warriors are getting really expensive. You know, I'm wondering if they might re-release them somehow. I don't know if they would, but if they're popular enough. But in Japan, apparently they're huge. They're called Dragon Quest over there.
Well, that's just silly.
Yeah, I know.
Those wacky Japanese. But, you know, like Shigeru Miyamoto said, the world is becoming more international, and soon we will all be one. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, do you guys have any predictions for 1999? Just, you know, solid predictions, or are we going to leave it at our speculations here?
I wonder if... I feel like we've had these consoles for a while now. You know, PlayStation's been out since 95, the N64 is 96. I think we're going to have some strong years, you know, in terms of software. It's going to be kind of the last. If this year wasn't, next year might be even better in terms of people understanding the hardware and making great games for it. But I also think we're going to start to hear the first murmurs of new consoles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, I think especially from Sony.
Yeah,
it's getting Sony time. I think Nintendo still has a little bit.
You know, like I said, I think Nintendo's clearly got the grasp in terms of hardware. I think Sony needs to make a push. They've made impressive headroads with their PlayStation, and if they really want to become a serious player, I think now's the time to start, you know, getting serious.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say that, you know, we talked around the Dreamcast for a bit and what we thought, but I actually think that there's room for a third person or like a third company on the market, and that, you know, we'll have N64, PlayStation, and Dreamcast. That's just, will everyone own all of them? I don't know about that, but we certainly, you know, there's certainly room for that upgraded hardware, and there are going to be people who want that kind of power and who want to play that kind of game. Like, maybe they don't want to buy a PC to play their Unreal on and stuff, but you know, they'll be able to do that with something that looks way better than either the N64 or the PlayStation. So I think that might is going to factor in.
You know, and my big thing is, I feel like since Game Boy Color has been so successful, that, you know, either another maker or Nintendo themselves are going to have to keep the handheld market going, because, like we were saying, ooh, about Pokemon, I've just been spending so much time with the Game Boy. There's a lot of potential there. We're talking about, maybe, is there a future for RPGs? We'll see. But, you know, I've got my money staked in handheld.
Do you think two handheld companies, like, by the turn of the decade?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, I mean, we had, like, you had the Lynx and the Game Gear, right? And they were expensive, and they looked okay. The games, I didn't think, were as great. But if you get someone in there, you know, a Sega or somebody else back committed to it, we could see another console war in the handhelds. And, you know, I don't know if there's any truth to that, but who knows?
I think who knows when it's going to happen, but it's inevitable. I mean, this market has already grown so profitable. And Nintendo has been the only game in the business in handhelds for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could argue that they've really only been the only player ever. I mean, all their competitors have been pretty weak. So you think that somebody's got to look at that and say, like, man, we've got to carve out our own niche. We've got to start something. Like I said, you know, like we mentioned before, Sony's had has had good success carving out a more adult, serious, mature type of game market with their PlayStation. I don't know if that kind of thing would work as well with a handheld market, but it might. You know, as technology gets cheaper and better, you know, maybe somebody's going to be able to market good, you know, better graphic color handheld.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know when I would see that coming. It seems like with Nintendo just launching its Game Boy Color, launching it with a strong lineup of games, I don't know how soon I see it happening.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. I think it's inevitable. I think there's got to be. It's got to be on somebody's radar that it's. I mean, it's not even like a two-player market like Sony and Nintendo and Sega had been for so long. It's a one-team market, you know.
Yeah. So how about?
This is Jimmy.
I only have one prediction. It's a little specific. But bear with me. I think that in September of next year, everyone is going to suddenly stop wearing FUBU when Jeff Gerstmann goes on Good Morning America wearing a FUBU jersey.
What?
Really?
That's my prediction.
Okay.
Who the fuck is Jeff Gerstmann?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I think that's what's going to happen, though.
Okay. You must have had a weird dream or a vision or something, right?
James Stradamus. Yeah.
You didn't eat those mushrooms that we found in your backyard, did you?
Maybe.
Boil them into a stew.
I feel kind of weird too. Like, it's just, is it weird? Is it warm in here?
Yeah, I feel
it's a little warm. It's a little warm.
Kind of like grumbling stomach and it's hot.
Tastes bad. Like the air tastes bad.
Yeah, it's stale.
Hang on. There's something behind this box over here. It looks like that little thing from Chrono Trigger, like the little time travel thing.
I love Chrono Trigger. Just,
let me
speaking of the future, I mean, who there's got to be a sequel to that, right?
Oh, Chrono Trigger 2? Who's got Trigger it? Yeah. 2.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's already been what, 3 years?
It will, but will it be like, it's got to be like the Final Fantasy games. It's going to have to come to a PlayStation, of course, right?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like that's where Squaresoft's doing all their stuff.
Yeah.
Let me just
get that out of here. I don't like that. I really don't feel very well.
I think I can just, if I flip.
Can you fix it?
If I flip this button on the back, it's just a.
What? Uh-oh.
That was bizarre.
Yeah, I don't know what's been happening, but
That was a great discussion.
Great show, everybody. I mean, I think you know, 2009 has been one of the best years in gaming history.
I've bought way more games than I buy in almost any year.
I cannot believe
so many games the last 2 months.
Yeah, especially you, man. I don't know where you get all that money. And
digital downloads, there was a ton of good games for that.
Just so easy to buy games now. You know, I can compulsively do it.
Yeah.
Every day I can find a new game to buy.
But great podcast, Kevin and Jimmy. Thanks for coming by. You know, it's always great to have you guys, but especially great on these, you know, kind of big year-end podcasts. We like to get as many opinions as possible.
Yeah, especially Jay and I don't want to have to just like go back and forth saying how awesome Borderlands is.
Yeah, which would have been the whole 2 hours. But to be fair, Borderlands is pretty good.
We've heard a few of those podcasts.
All right, so we want to hear what you thought was the best of the year. You can email us, lowscorepodcast@gmail.com. You can visit our blog, lowscorepodcast.blogspot.com.
Our new and improved blog.
It is where the podcast lives. Get you one.
Don't be shy now. Come on, catch a ride.
And yeah, go on iTunes, share with your friends, love us to death, send us more candy, and come visit us at MAGFest, as we're going to be doing a bunch of stuff there.
We're going to be at MAGFest, which is January 1 through 4, up in Alexandria. Go to magfest.org.
And stay tuned on the blog for announcements of panels and low score appearances. There will be a lot going on that weekend, so be sure to check in multiple times if you can.
Yes.
Yes, and with all four of us, not just the Bobby and Jay show, but the Bobby, Jay, Jimmy, Kevin show. So it's going to be a good show.
Hoorah. Well, thank you guys for coming.
Thanks again.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks you, everybody, for listening.